Good morning. My name is Debbie Voris. I'm with the California Office of the Attorney General, and I represent the defendants. This morning, I'd like to address two issues. First, I'm going to address the question that has been presented by the court's order dated May 11th. That question is whether the court has jurisdiction over the defendant's appeal. And second, I'm going to address the facts that show that defendants are entitled to qualified immunity as a matter of law. With respect to jurisdiction, this court has jurisdiction over all the defendants' appeals because they all raise qualified immunity as a defense. This court has jurisdiction over Rendon, Acuna, and Baber's appeal because summary judgment determinations are appealable when they resolve a dispute concerning any issue relating to qualified immunity.
Even when the trial court finds that there are material issues of fact in dispute and therefore can't resolve the issue at that stage?
Yes. Under Gomez v. Jeffers, the court of appeal has jurisdiction to consider disputed issues, has jurisdiction to consider qualified immunity even when there's a question as to whether or not the facts are material. Here, defendants modified the plan by slowing the release of inmates in order to make it safer. It is a legal question whether their motive was permissible, and review is appropriate because the availability of qualified immunity naturally turns on whether it was clearly established law that their motive was permissible. With respect to Bunnell, the court has jurisdiction over Bunnell's appeal because the appealable issue is a legal one, whether the facts alleged by Tavares support a claim of violation of clearly established law. Under Jeffers v. Gomez, the court has jurisdiction to review the district court's ruling when there is an allegation of bad motive, but no evidence of bad motive, and when the evidence, viewed in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, demonstrates that the defendant's conduct was not objectively reasonable, but the district court nevertheless denies summary judgment, ruling that the defendant's motive is in dispute. Here, the district court found an issue of bad motive concerning Bunnell's motive, but no evidence of bad motive exists, and the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to Bunnell, in the light most favorable to Tavares, demonstrates that Bunnell's conduct was not objectively unreasonable. With respect to Rios, first, this court has jurisdiction to consider Rios's appeal because the ground for the motion is qualified immunity, and Rios is appealing the district court's denial on the ground of qualified immunity.
But did either the magistrate judge in his report and recommendation to the district judge or the district judge actually address the qualified immunity issue as to Rios?
The district court conducted a de novo review of Rios's motion and disagreed with the magistrate judge's analysis concerning Rios. It appears that the district judge did consider the first Saucier prong and found a genuine issue as to whether Rios violated a constitutional right. But the district court erred because it did not go beyond the first prong and consider the second Saucier prong, and that is whether whether it would have been clear to a reasonable officer in Rios' position that his conduct was unlawful in the situation that he confronted. This court reviews questions of qualified immunity de novo and has the discretion to consider Rios' motion based on qualified immunity. Second, with respect to Rios, the appealable issue is a legal one, whether the facts alleged by Tavares support a claim of violation of clearly established law. The district court concluded that disputed facts exist, but does not identify any facts. Regardless, this court has jurisdiction to determine whether the denial of qualified immunity is appropriate by assuming that the version of the material facts asserted by Tavares is correct. And in addition, like with Bunnell, the court has jurisdiction to review the district court's ruling when there is an allegation of bad motive, but no evidence of bad motive, and when the defendant's conduct was not objectively reasonable.
Counsel, I just want to make sure I understand your argument about our jurisdiction over Rios. Neither the magistrate judge nor the district judge reached his claim, his qualified immunity claim, as I understand it. Therefore, it seems to me it's an interlocutory appeal of a district court's order denying summary judgment. This court doesn't have jurisdiction. What is your response to that?
My response is that the law is clear that the court has jurisdiction when the ground for a motion is qualified immunity. In this case, Rio filed a motion for summary judgment based on qualified immunity. The district court denied his motion And although it does not appear that the district court did consider the second Saucier prong, he did – the court did by necessity consider the first Saucier prong in making a determination that there were disputed issues of fact as to whether or not Rios violated a constitutional right.
Well, what the district court essentially did was say there was a violation, and if you know, there's a question of material fact. If you are, it didn't reach immunity because if you because it was holding that that there was a material issue of fact, and if you lose, there's no immunity.
What the district court concluded without any analysis was that
is that right? I mean, that's the sort of thing we really can't review, I think.
I believe under the law that you can review it because the motion was based on qualified immunity, and the district court's decision is not clear as far as reaching a decision on the merits. The district court found that there were disputed issues of fact that
right.
prohibited summary judgment.
So is it counsel's position that in any case where qualified immunity is raised by motion before the district court, if the district court denies that motion, that that is that the appellate court would always have jurisdiction, even if the basis for the denial is a material issue of fact in dispute?
No. I think there are situations where the court would not have jurisdiction. And that is where there's a challenge that the trial court correctly ruled that a factual conflict exists. In this case, we are challenging whether the defendants violated a clearly established law given the undisputed facts. And in that circumstance, I believe the court does have jurisdiction.
But since the district court found that there were disputed facts, material issues of fact in dispute, that precluded the district court from granting the summary judgment, how does this court have jurisdiction?
Under Jeffers v. Gomez, the court held that it had jurisdiction to determine whether the denial of qualified immunity was appropriate by assuming the version of the facts that was presented by the plaintiff. In Jeffers v. Gomez, the facts were very similar to this case. There was an allegation that the correctional officers shot at an inmate maliciously and sadistically. The court concluded that there was insufficient evidence of any improper motive and found qualified immunity on the part of the correctional officers.
Yes, but in this case, the district court essentially said there was sufficient evidence if the plaintiff, if we resolve this in plaintiff's favor.
So the district court found that there were disputed issues of fact
right.
concerning motive. And under Jeffers.
Right. Meaning that we have to decide whether or not there was a malicious motive. And and if there was, then you're not entitled to immunity.
That is correct.
And we're not supposed to say, okay, he didn't, the facts weren't, we weren't supposed to resolve whether the sufficiency of that underlying evidence. We would have jurisdiction if he said even, oh, never mind, if he denied it saying that, if he denied the motion for summary judgment saying you're not entitled to immunity, even if plaintiff proves what the plaintiff said the plaintiff is going to prove.
Again, under Jeffers v. Gomez, the court has the jurisdiction to look at the facts anew, determine whether the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff show malice and wrongful intent. I'd like to reserve
okay.
any time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court. My name is Craig Weaver, and along with my colleague, Mr. Ryan Holdaway, under the supervision of Professor Marlene Laughlin, represent Mr. Gregory Tavares, the plaintiff appellee in this matter. contrary to the State's assertion, this Court does not properly have jurisdiction over the defendants, with the exception of Defendant Bunnell. Regardless, even if this Court were to find that it did have proper jurisdiction over the defendants, the District Court's denial of the defendant's motion for summary judgment should still be affirmed because, based on the facts alleged, taken in the light most favorable to Mr. Tabarez, qualified immunity would be improper here.
What's the jurisdictional base for Bunnell?
With respect to Bunnell, there's no question as to whether or not there's no question as to his conduct, which would place him under Scenario 1 of the test articulated by this Court in Jeffers v. Gomez. Under Scenario 2 or 3 would be with respect to Bunnell. And Scenario 2 or 3 under Jeffers v. Gomez are properly before this Court because those determinations hinge on an issue of law. Basically, under Scenario 2, we go ahead and assume that the conduct is undisputed and we assume that the motive is also undisputed. And then this Court is to apply the undisputed conduct and the undisputed motive to the law to determine whether or not qualified immunity is appropriate.
Did the District Court not find that there were material issues of fact and dispute as to Bunnell?
There are material issues of fact and dispute with respect to Bunnell. However, under the second and third scenarios articulated in Jeffers, this Court can simply take those facts because there's no disputed conduct, no factual conduct in dispute, no genuine factual conduct with respect to Bunnell, at least arguably, that this Court can then take all allegations in the light most favorable to Tabarez, assuming all those allegations to be true, apply all of those facts to the requisite law to determine whether or not the denial was appropriate. Also under the third prong, which is appropriate before this Court, we can go ahead and impute that improper motive on Bunnell, because Mr. Tabarez in this case has alleged that Officer Bunnell was intentionally attempting to facilitate a riot based on his actions on April 8, 2002. So under that scenario, this Court's review is limited to whether or not Mr. Tabarez has alleged facts sufficient that are specific and non-conclusory to support the allegation of that improper motive. And here we argue that there are facts sufficient on this record. We have the video camera.
Can you identify those facts for us?
We have the video cameras that are all facing the Northern Handball Court, where the Northern Hispanics were directed to and required to stay. We also have Bunnell aware of the fact the release was not going as planned. He was aware that the Northerners were being released from the front of Building 1 slower than expected, and the Southerners being released from the rear of Building 1, as was not planned, because the purpose was that the inmates mingle inside of Building 1 to determine whether or not it would be safe to proceed with the unlock. Because the interior defendants, Acuna, Baber, and Bunnell, changed that plan, we don't know who decided to change it or who made certain decisions, which is the conduct questions with respect to those defendants, which is why it's improper to review them. Something happened in the building that changed the plan, where it was more than just releasing them slowly. It was releasing some inmates from the front of Building 1, Northern Hispanics, and releasing them first, and then releasing all the Southerners and other inmates from the rear. Also, the Northerners were checked for weapons by Officer White. We don't know who directed or ordered Officer White to make that check, but it did happen. Again, a question of conduct. The Southerners do not appear to have been checked for weapons. Nothing in the record says they were, and then subsequently to the riot, they actually used their weapons. So Bunnell could see this happening. Bunnell ordered Captain Piper to relay an order to Lieutenant Baber to proceed with the unlock as directed. However, Baber ignored this order. At this point, Bunnell should have called the yard down. A reasonable prison official, consciously perceiving the risk of harm associated with this unlock, would have called the yard down then to prevent the riot. Bunnell did not do so. Bunnell instead let a group of about 50 Northern Hispanics, required them to stay on the handball court, while he allowed the Southern Hispanics to gather in a group of about 50 to 60 at the rear of Building 1. At this point, Bunnell should have called on the yard. California Department of Correction policy and FSP policy, Folsom State Prison policy, requires the yard to be called down when more than two inmates of the same group gather together. Here we have a group of 50 and we have a group of 60 rivals that are gathering together. The yard is not called down. Bunnell should have called down the yard at this point, even though he should have already called it down initially, but he didn't. Next, Bunnell allowed the Southerners to break into two groups of roughly 30, proceed over 300 yards, three football fields across the prison yard, directly towards their known rivals who are being required by prison officials to stay on the handball court. Captain Piper actually turns to Bunnell as the Southerners began caressing across the yard and said, "You want to call the yard down, right?" Bunnell's response was, "No, not yet." No reasonable prison official would have taken this action in light of the circumstances. Bunnell actually waited until the Southerners had progressed all the way across the prison yard and engaged the Southern Hispanics. They had already engaged each other before Bunnell ever called the yard down. These facts.
Is counsel explaining why Bunnell is entitled to qualified immunity?
Why Bunnell is not entitled. Based on these actions, these allegations, they're undisputed for the most part, support Mr. Tabara's allegation that Bunnell acted with an improper motive. These facts are sufficient, they're specific, and they are non-conclusory. Therefore, under the third prong of Jeffers, the third scenario of Jeffers, even though this court does have jurisdiction to review Bunnell's appeal, this denial of his motion for summary judgment based on qualified immunity by the district court should be affirmed by this court based on.
But isn't it true, counsel, that Acuna was not present during the that whole scenario you just described?
That's correct. Acuna, Baber, and Rendon were all inside of Building 1. However, jurisdiction for these defendants is improper before this court because there's dispute as to their conduct. If you look to the first scenario articulated by this court in Jeffers, it says when there is dispute as to conduct, review is improper before this court. Now, the conduct we're talking about with respect to Building 1 is a few different things. Now, it's undisputed that the plan was changed. The defendants admit that they changed the plan, but they only admit that they changed the plan to release the inmates more slowly. There were more additional changes made that are in dispute that are questions of conduct. We don't know who or why the decision was made to release the Northerners before the rest of the inmates. We don't know who ordered this. We don't know who ordered or why it was ordered that the Northern Hispanics exit from the front of Building 1 and be checked for weapons, while all other inmates exit from the rear, which circumvented the controlled unlock plan, the purpose of it, which was allowing the inmates to intermingle inside of Building 1 to see if it was going to be safe to continue with the unlock. The prison officials who developed this plan wanted to make sure that they could contain the violence because they knew there was a high likelihood for violence here. There was definitely a perceived risk. They wanted to make sure that if there was going to be any violence, it could be contained within Building 1. That's why they wanted them to mingle in small groups. By circumventing that and allowing all of the, well, requiring all the Northerners to leave first, releasing them first, directing them out the front of the building, and then releasing all the Southerners and all their inmates out of the rear, the defendants circumvented the goal of having small groups and basically delayed the problem to the yard, where the two groups would gather in large numbers and then a full-fledged riot would occur. So those questions of conduct as to who and why made certain decisions inside of Building 1 are not properly on appeal before this court. The only reason that Bunnell is properly on appeal before this court is because of the fact that his conduct is undisputed for the most part. With respect to Rios, this court is correct that jurisdiction is not proper. This court does have jurisdiction based on the precedent from the U.S. Supreme Court of Mitchell versus Forsyth, saying that with a district court denies a motion for summary judgment based on qualified immunity, that denial can be reviewed to the extent that it turns on an issue of law, not an issue of fact, but an issue of law, which is why the Jeffers tests have been articulated. However, Rios' motion for summary judgment was not denied based on qualified immunity. As this court has pointed out, Rios' motion was denied on the merits. We know that because if we look to page 2 of volume 1 of the excerpts of record, the district court concludes that there are disputed issues of fact concerning the defendant Rios which preclude the granting of summary judgment on his behalf. Now, while this is not clear that it's based on the merits, we must take into consideration the district court is reversing the magistrate court's decision. The magistrate court...
Not really reversing, just simply not adopting it.
Not adopting it, yes. That's correct, Your Honor. If you look to the magistrate judge's decision on page 34 of volume 1 of the record, the magistrate says that there is no need to consider the defense of qualified immunity with respect to the claims upon which the court has resolved the summary judgment motion on the merits in favor of the defendants. The magistrate judge resolved the summary judgment motion on the merits with respect to Rios. Therefore, the district court judge was not adopting that determination also on the merits. Therefore, Rios' appeal is an interlocutory appeal, which would preclude this court from having jurisdiction. With that, we would like to ask that this court, with respect to Defendant Bunnell, affirms the district court's decision and denies Defendant Bunnell's motion for summary judgment based on qualified immunity, and with respect to the remaining defendants, dismiss their appeals for lack of jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. In closing, I would urge the court to engage its discretion to accept jurisdiction over Rios's appeal on the ground that it was based on the ground his motion was based on qualified immunity. And the facts with regard to Rios show he's entitled to qualified immunity. The yard was in chaos. He aimed and shot his rifle into a large group of inmates that were attacking Tabarez. He was attempting to protect Tabarez, not to injure him. And on that basis, his conduct could not be considered malicious and sadistic. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And the case just argued is submitted.